Dr. Voke and Mr. Veach. There is a stairway. It climbs crooked up the side of total darkness. Yet its outlines are visible like a scribble of lightning engraved upon a black sky. And though standing unsupported, it does not fall. Nor does it end its jagged ascent until it has reached the obscure loft where Voke, the recluse, has cloistered himself. Someone named Veach is now mounting the stairway, which seems to trouble him somehow. Though the angular scaffolding as a whole seems secure enough, Veach appears hesitant to place his full weight on the individual steps. A victim of vague misgivings, he ascends in weird mincing movements. Every so often, he looks back over his shoulder at the stairs he has just placed his weight upon, for they feel to him more like soft clay than solid material, and perhaps he is expecting to see the imprints of his soles on their surface. But the stairs are unchanged. Veach is wearing a long, brightly colored coat, and the splinters on the railing of the stairway sometimes snag his bulky sleeves. They also snag his bony hands, but Veach is more exasperated by the destruction of expensive cloth than injuries to his undear flesh. While climbing, he sucks at a small puncture in his forefinger to keep from staining his coat with blood. At the 17th stair above the 17th and last landing, Veach trips. The long tails of the coat become tangled between his legs, and there is a ripping sound as he falls. At the end of his patience, Veach removes the coat and flings it over the side of the stairway into the black abyss. Shabby clothes hang loosely upon his thin body. At the top of the stairs, there is only a single door. With widely splayed fingers, Veach pushes it open. Behind the door is Voke's loft, which appears to be a cross between a playroom and a place of torture. The darkness and silence of the great room are somewhat compromised by noisy jets of blue-green light flickering spasmodically along the walls. But for the most part, the room lies buried in shadows. Even its exact height is uncertain, since above the convulsive illumination, almost nothing can be seen by even the sharpest pair of eyes. Never mind Veach's squinting little slits. Some of the lower beams of the crisscrossing rafters are visible, but the ceiling is entirely obscured, if in fact Voke's sanctum has been provided with one. Somewhere above the gritty floor, more than a few life-sized dolls hang suspended by wires which glisten like wetted strands of a spider web. But none of the dolls is seen in whole. The long-beaked profile of one juts into the light, the shiny satin legs of another find their way out of the upper dimness. A beautifully pale hand glows in the distance, while much closer, the better part of a harlequin dangles into view, cut off at the neck by blackness. Indeed, much of the inventory of this vast room appears only as parts and pieces of objects which manage to push their way out of the smothering dark. Upon the floor, a long, low box thrusts partway into the scene, showing off its reinforced edges of bright metal strips plugged with heavy bolts. Pointed and strangely shaped instruments bloom out of the loam of shadows. They are crusted with age. A great wheel appears at quarter phase in the room's dimness. Other sections, appendages, and gearworks of curious machines also complicate this immense gallery. As Veach progresses through the half-light, he is suddenly halted by a metal arm with a soft black handle. He backs off and continues to walk about the chamber, grinding sawdust, sand, perhaps pulverized stars underfoot. The dismembered limbs of dolls and puppets are strewn about everywhere. Posters, signs, billboards, and leaflets of various sorts are scattered around like playing cards, their bright words disarranged into nonsense. Countless other objects, devices, and leftover goods stock the room, more than one could possibly take notice of. But they are all, in some way, like those which have been described. One wonders, then, how they could add up to such an atmosphere of... Isn't repose the word? Yes, but a certain kind of repose. The repose of ruin.
Hello? Veach calls out. Doctor? Are you here?
Within the darkness ahead, there suddenly appears a tall rectangle, like a ticket seller's booth at a carnival. The lower part is composed of wood and the upper part of glass. Its interior is lit up by an oily red glare. Slumped forward on its seat inside the booth, as if asleep, is a well-dressed dummy. Nicely fitting black jacket and vest with bright silver buttons, a white high-collar shirt with silver cufflinks, and a billowing cravat which displays a pattern of moons and stars. Because his head is forwardly inclined, the dummy's only feature of note is the black sheen of its painted hair. Veach approaches the booth a little cautiously. He seems to be most interested in the figure within. Through a semi-circular opening in the glass, Veach slides his hand into the booth, apparently with the intention of giving the dummy's arm a shake. But before his own arm creeps very far toward its goal, several things occur in succession. The dummy casually lifts its head and opens its eyes. It reaches out and places its wooden hand on Veach's hand of flesh, and its jaw drops open to dispense a mechanical laugh.
Yah, ha, 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 ha. Yah, ha, 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 ha.
Resting its hand away from the dummy, Veach staggers backward a few steps. The dummy continues to give forth its mocking laughter, which flaps its way into every niche of the loft and flies back as peculiar echoes. The dummy's face is vacant and handsome. Its eyes roll like mad marbles. Then, from out of the shadows behind the dummy's booth, steps someone who is every bit as thin as Veach, though much taller. His outfit is not unlike the dummy's, but his clothes hang on him, and what there is left of his sparse hair falls like torn rags across his bone-white scalp.
"Did you ever wonder, Mr. Veach?"
Volk begins, parading slowly toward his guest while holding one side of his coat like the train of a gown.
"I say, did you ever wonder what it is that makes the animation of a wooden dummy so terrible to see, not to mention to hear?"
"Listen to it."
"I mean, really listen. Yah, ha, 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 ha. A series of sounds that becomes excruciatingly eloquent when uttered by the ticket man. They are a species of poetry that sings what should not be sung.
That speaks what should not be spoken.
But what in the world is it laughing about?"
Nothing, it would seem. No clear motives or impulses make the dummy laugh,
and yet it does.
But what is this laughter for, you might well ponder. It seems to be for your ears alone, doesn't it? It seems to be directed at every part of your being. It seems knowing. And it is knowing. but in another way from what you suppose, in another direction entirely. It is not you the dummy knows. It is only itself. The question is not, what is this laughter for? Not at all. The question is, where does it come from? This, in fact, is what inspires your apprehension. While the dummy does terrorize you, his terror is actually greater than yours. Think of it. Wood waking up. I can't put it any clearer than that. And let's not forget about the painted hair and lips, the glassy eyes. These, too, are aroused from a sleep that should never have been broken. These, too, are now part of a tingling network of dummy nerves, alive and aware in a way we cannot begin to imagine. This is something too painful for tears. And so the dummy laughs in your face, trying to give vent to a horror that was no part of his old home of wood and paint and glass. But this horror is the very essence of its new home. Our world, Mr. Veach. This is what is so terrible about the laughing ticket man. Go to sleep now, dummy. There. He has gone back to his lifeless slumber. Be glad I didn't make one that screams, Mr. Veach. And be gladder still that the dummy, after all, is just a device. Am I getting through to you, Mr. Veach?
Yes, says Veach, who seems not to have heard a word of Voke's monologue.
Well, to what do I owe your presence here today? It is day, isn't it? Or very close to it.
It is, Veach replies.
Good. I liked to keep abreast of things. What's your latest?
Voke inquires, while sauntering slowly about the clutter of his loft. Veach leans back against a vague mound of indefinable objects and stares at the floor. He sounds drowsy.
I wouldn't have come here, but I didn't know what else to do. How can I tell you? The past days and nights, especially the nights, like icy hells. I suppose I should say that there is someone...
Whom you have taken a liking to, Voke finishes.
Yes, but then there is someone else.
Who is somehow an obstacle. Someone who has made your nights so frosty. This seems very straightforward. Tell me, what is her name? The first someone.
Prana, answers Veach after some hesitation.
And his, the second?
Lamb. But why do you need their names to help me?
Their names, like your name, and mine for that matter, are of no actual importance. I was just maintaining a polite interest in your predicament, nothing more. As for helping you, that assumes I have some mastery over this situation.
But I thought, stammers Veach, the loft, your devices, you seem to have a certain knowledge.
Like the dummy's knowledge?
You shouldn't have depended on it. Now you just have one more disappointment to contend with, one more pain.
But listen, can't you just stick it out? In time you will forget all about this Prana. Why become involved in that madness? It's something to consider.
I can't help myself, Doctor.
Says Veach in a plaintive voice.
I understand, but first hear me out. I hate to see you like this, Mr. Veach. Believe me, I know whereof I speak. I was not always as you see me. But you know what they say. Body and soul are both undone
when two by two they become as one. Well, perhaps I made that up. My memory is blissfully bad. In any event, let me give you one final nugget of advice. Forsake the world and cling to the shadows.
I am my own shadow, Veach replies.
Yes, I can see that. Then all I can say at this point is that you've been warned. So, let us speak hypothetically for a moment. Are you familiar with the Street of Wavering Peaks? I know it has a more common name, but I like to call it that because of all those tall, slanting houses.
Veach nods to indicate that he too knows the street.
Well, and I promise nothing, remember. I make no pledges or vows. But if you can somehow manage to bring both of your friends through that street tonight, I think there might be a solution to your problem if you really want one. Do you mind what form the solution takes?
I just want your help, Doctor. I'm in your hands.
You really are serious, aren't you?
Veach says nothing in reply. Voke shrugs and gradually fades back to his point of origin within the deepest shadows of the room. The red light in the booth of the ticket man also fades like a setting sun, until the only color left in the room is the ultramarine of the flames burning on the walls. Veach folds his hands and gazes into the upper reaches of the loft as if he can already see the slender rooftops hovering over the street of wavering peaks. By night, the facades of each edifice on either side of this narrow street seem to be fused together, as if they are bonded by shadows to one another. Aside from their foundations and a few floors with shuttered windows, they are all roof. Splendidly, they rise into the night, often reaching fantastic altitudes. At angles, they sway a little against the sky, undulating at their pinnacles like tall trees in a gentle wind. Tonight, the sky is a swamp of murky clouds glowing in the false fire of the moon. From the direction of the street's arched entranceway, three approaching figures are preceded by three elongated shadows. One walks ahead, leading the way but lacking the proper gestures of knowledge and authority. Behind are the shapes of a man and a woman, side by side, with only a slice of evening's soft radiance between them. Toward the end of the street, the leading figure stops, and the other two catch up with him. They are now all three standing outside the loftiest of the street's peaked buildings. This one appears to serve as a place of business, since there is a sign hanging above its door. Muddled by shadows, it swings ever so slightly in the wind, squeaking softly. On either of its sides, there is a painted picture of the goods or services sold there. A pair of tongs, or something similar, laying crosswise upon what is perhaps a poker or some other lengthy implement. But the business is closed for the night, and the shutters are secured. A round attic window high above seems to be no more than an empty socket, though from ground level, where the three figures have assumed the tentative postures of somnambulists, it is difficult to tell exactly what things are like up there. And now a fog begins to cut off their gaze from the upper regions of the Street of Wavering Peaks. Veach looks vaguely distressed, apparently unsure just how much longer they should loiter in this place. Not being privy to what is supposed to occur, if anything, what action should he take? All he can do at the moment is stall. But soon enough, everything is brought to a swift conclusion.
One moment, Veach is drowsily conversing with his two companions, both of them looking sternly suspicious at this point.
The next moment, it is as if they are two puppets who have been whisked upwards on invisible strings into the fog and out of sight. It all happens so suddenly that they do not make a sound, though a little later there are faint, hollow screams from high above. Veach has fallen to his knees and is covering his face with both his hands.
Two went up, but only one comes down. A single form suspended an arm's length above the stone-paved street and twisting a bit, as if at the end of a hangman's rope. Veach uncovers his eyes and looks at the thing. Yes, there is only one, but this one has too many. There is too much of everything on this body. Two faces sharing a single head. Two mouths that have fallen silent forever with parted lips.
The thing continues to dangle in the air even after Veach has completely collapsed on the street of wavering peaks.
Voke's next meeting with Veach is as unexpected as the last. There is a disturbance in the loft, and the recluse lugs his bones out of the shadows to investigate. What he sees is Veach and the ticket man both screaming with laughter. Their cachinations stir up the stagnant air of the loft. They are two maniac twins crying and cackling with a single voice.
"What's going on here, Mr. Veach?" demands Voke.
Veach ignores him and continues his riotous duet with the dummy.
Even after Voke touches the booth and says, "Go to sleep, dummy," Veach still giggles all by himself, as if he too is an automaton without command over his own actions.
Voke knocks Veach to the floor, which seems to hit the right mechanism to shut off his voice.
At least he is quiet for a few moments. Then he looks up and scowls at Voke.
"Why did you have to do that to them?"
he asks with a deeply stricken reproachfulness. His voice is rough from all that laughter. It sounds like grating machinery. "I'm not going to pretend I don't know what you're talking about.
I have heard about what happened. Not that I should care. But you can't hold me responsible, Mr. Veach. I never leave my loft. You know that. However, you're perfectly free to go if you go now. Haven't you caused me enough trouble?"
"Why did it have to happen like that?" Veach protests.
"How should I know? You said you didn't mind what form the solution to your problem took.
Besides, I think it all worked out for the best.
Those two were making a fool of you, Mr. Veach. They wanted each other, and now they have each other. Two by two, they have become as one. While you are free to move on to your next disaster.
Wait one moment. I know what's bothering you," says Voke with sudden enlightenment.
"You're distressed because it all ended up with their demise and not yours. Death is always the best thing, Mr. Veach, but who would have thought you could appreciate such a view? I've underestimated you, no doubt about it. My apologies."
"No!" screams Veach, shivering like a sick animal. Voke now becomes excited.
"No! No! What is the matter with you? Why do you set me up for these disappointments? I've had quite enough without your adding to the heap. Take a lesson from the ticket man here. Do you see him whining?" "No, he is silent. He is still. A dummy's silence is the most soothing silence of all, and his stillness is the perfect stillness of the unborn. He could be making a fuss, but he isn't. And it is precisely his lack of action, his unfulfilled nature, that makes him the ideal companion. My only true friend, it seems. Deadwood, I adore you. Look at how his hands rest upon his lap in empty prayer. Look at the noble bearing of his collapsed and powerless limbs. Look at his numb lips muttering nothing, and look at those eyes, how they gaze on and on forever.
Voke takes a closer look at the dummy's eyes, and his own begin to lower with dark intentness. He leans his head against the booth for the closest possible scrutiny, his hands adhering to the glass as if by the force of some powerful suction. Finally, Voke sees that the dummy's eyes have changed. They are now dripping little drops of blood, which roll slowly down shiny cheeks. Voke pulls himself away from the booth and turns to Veach.
"You've been tampering with him," he bellows as best he can.
Veach blinks a few leftover tears of berserk laughter out of his eyes, and his lips form a smile.
"I didn't do a thing," he whispers mockingly. "Don't blame me for your troubles."
Voke seems to be momentarily paralyzed with outrage, though his face is twisted by a thousand thoughts of action. Veach apparently is aware of the danger, and his eyes search throughout the room, possibly for a means of escape or for a weapon to use against his antagonist. He fixes on something and begins to move toward it in a crouch.
"Where do you think you're going?"
says Voke, now liberated from the disabling effects of his rage. Veach is trying to reach something on the floor that is the approximate shape and size of a coffin. Only part of the long black box sticks out of the shadows into the bluish-green irradiance of the loft. A thick strip of burnished silver edges the object and is secured to it with heavy bolts.
"Get away from there!"
shouts Voke as Veach stoops over the box, fingering its lid. But before he can open it, before he can make another move, Voke makes his.
"I've done my best for you, Mr. Veach, and you've given me nothing but grief. I've tried to deliver you from the fate of your friends, but now I deliver you to it."
At these words, Veach's body begins to rise in a puppet's hunch, then soars up into the tenebrous rafters and beyond, transported by unseen wires. His arms and legs twitch uncontrollably during the elevation, and his screams fade. But Voke pays no attention to his victim's progress. His baggy clothes fluttering, he rushes to the object so recently threatened with violation and drags it toward an open spot on the floor. The light from the walls shines on the coffin's silky black surface. Voke is on his knees before the long box, tenderly testing its security with his fingertips. As if each accumulated moment of deliberation were a blasphemy, he suddenly lifts back the lid. Laid out inside is a young woman whose beauty has been unnaturally perpetuated by a fanatic of her form. Voke gazes for some time at the corpse, then he whispers to her, who cannot hear him,
"Always the best thing, my dear. Always the best thing."
He is still kneeling before the coffin as his features begin to undergo the ravages of various, obviously conflicting phases of feeling. Eyes, mouth, The whole facial structure is called upon to perform gruesome acrobatics of expression. Ultimately, the strain of Voke's inner turmoil resolves itself in a fit of convulsive laughter, the liberating laughter of an antic derangement. By the powers of his idiotic hilarity, Voke rises to his feet and begins to caper about, wildly dancing to absent music with an invisible partner. Hopping and bouncing and bobbing, he seems to be overtaken by a bout of seizures while his laughter turns into a hoarse cacophony. Through complete absence of mind, or perhaps because he has momentarily gained possession of himself, Voke makes his way out of the loft and is now laughing into the dark abyss beyond the precarious railing at the top of the crooked stairway. His final laugh seems to stick in his throat as over the railing he falls without a sound. Thus, the screams you now hear are not those of the plummeting Voke or the hapless Veach, both of them gone into what dark regions none can say. Nor are they the last echoes of Prana and Lamb's cries of horror. These screams, the ones from beyond the doorway at the top of the stairs, belong only to a helpless dummy who now feels warm drops of blood sliding down his lacquered cheeks. For the ticket man has been left alone and alive in the shadows of an abandoned loft, and his eyes are rolling like mad marbles.